This episode of AV Excel was recorded on June 29th, 2017. LG's 77-inch wallpaper OLED TV is here. Epson's got a $2,000 4K-ish projector on the way. Dolby Atmos is coming to Netflix. Don't get too excited about Prime Day. And hey, 5,000 lumen projectors are popping up everywhere. All that and so much more coming up on AV Excel.
Testing 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah. Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear, stereo excellence, and headphone awesomeness, no matter what your budget is. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Herron.
Do you have ID, sir?
I do. Multiple forms.
Why have I been saying that to everybody lately?
I even have an entry visa for going into China if I need to. That's good for at least another 9 years.
That's convenient.
Yeah, it's nice. They approved my paperwork, and after doing the background check on me and my family, they gave me the nod to say, welcome.
I think it's very generous that even after checking the background of your family, they still decided to give you the extended visa.
It could have been longer. I think I could have got a 20-year one or something, but I was happy with 10.
You know, 10's a long time.
It goes by quick.
Good point. Speaking of going by quickly, it was just January at CES 2017 where Robert and I were staring in awe and occasionally giggling hysterically at the soundbar. That was mostly me. That seems to have been inspired by, you know, Kylo Ren's helmet. But what I'm talking about is the 77-inch LG W7 OLED wallpaper TV. The 65-inch model has been around for a while. It's $8,000. The 77-inch model, $19,999 and probably 99 cents. We'll call it $20,000. If you can find it, not on Amazon, there's a listing for B&H. Supposedly, you might be able to pick it up at your local Magnolia store inside of Best Buy. It's kind of funny because like LG sends you to Best Buy, and Best Buy basically says, yeah, you can't order that online. Call the store.
Special delivery.
They probably are not keeping a lot of those in stock at your local retail.
I am trying to figure out or guess. Do a guesstimation of how many in existence there may be of the 77-inch wallpaper TV.
You were saying like 10,000.
Maybe that or 20. Tops, and you think about the demand for that, they'll go quick. And if the demand is there, they will pump them out like crazy. So the challenge for doing the largest sized OLEDs, it always has been the case, is that the yield on the produced panels.
That's a lot of crystals to get right.
When you start making these larger and larger screens and the tolerance is zero effectively in terms of the errors or the bad pixels that can be on that screen. So it's a challenge to build that large panel size without introducing any flaws at all. But apparently they're getting it down pretty well if they're shipping now the 77-inch size. Now, that OLED wallpaper design is unique. It's literally just the panel itself, and it's a couple millimeters thick. It requires a special bracket that attaches to a flat surface, your wall. Mm-hmm. The whole thing weighs like 26 pounds. Right. That's the beauty of it. But like you mentioned, it has that soundbar with an approximately 82-inch long custom ribbon cable that has to be attached to it. Not in-wall rated, but there are ways around that if you really did want to hide that in the wall, so to speak. But it's flat, and I think you can paint over it. So it wouldn't be hard to integrate that into, you know, the furniture right in front of the wall that the TV is going to hang on. I look at this as like the best bedroom TV you could possibly ask for because it's got decent sound. Uh-huh. With the support of things like Dolby Atmos built into that soundbar.
You're going to need a big empty wall to put this thing on.
Oh, I would make room. Oh, please. if you have room for a 65-inch screen, a 26-pound 77-inch OLED.
I was laughing because I saw a picture of somebody's bedroom and they
don't let it hang off the edges. No.
They'd created sort of a box up near the ceiling for a projector. And I remember being like, that's somebody that likes, you know, laying in bed and watching movies.
Because of this being that wallpaper design where it literally is the panel itself, you can walk up to one that is mounted and put your finger under the corner of it and pull it off, and the magnet will pull it back on there. But it is literally flexible.
You can't see this at home, but my eyes pop open when Robert says that. Because I'm thinking like this is a $20,000 sheet of glass that is magnetically mounted to a frame you've mounted to the wall.
Very true.
You know, I don't think I want to be pulling up on the edge of it as a party trick.
The thing I want to see, though, is what will the price be for other 77-inch designs, like the C series, or I don't know, I don't think it's coming to the B series, but something in a more traditional TV frame design. I can't wait to see. As far as this panel tech goes, doesn't matter which series you buy from LG for their OLEDs for 2017, they're all effectively identical in terms of picture performance, chipsets incorporated, features, and things like that. It's really just, do you want it in a frame? Do you want it on something that literally, once mounted, is a couple millimeters thick to the wall? That, to me, it stays out of the way quite nicely. Let me put it that way. And it delights the senses. And it has all that support for your favorite, every streaming format and HDR format there is. And all-around capable TV, plus a number of picture improvements, too, across the 7 Series line for 2017. Anyway,
The idea of it. I understand where LG's coming from, where they're like, you know, we decided it had to be less than 5 millimeters to have the truly immersive cinematic experience. It's like looking through a window.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a little breathy, especially when you have that giant soundbar. But I get where they're going with that.
You know, but I have to say that one of the coolest things about that wallpaper design, once it's installed, and it literally is 2-3 millimeters thick on the wall.
Right.
Its viewing angle is such that it's so wide that when they enable their art mode on the TV, and it's able to, with that hardly a bezel around the edge at all that you can perceive, once it starts generating picture frames and art within that as graphics, very high resolution, it looks fantastic too. So it's like,
I've just never, of all the things I've thought about, as I'm looking at my 100, 110-inch, 120-inch projection systems that cost a fraction of this OLED.
Size-wise, yeah, but in terms of color performance,
the color performance
and contrast performance
is outrageous. Yeah, I cannot afford a projector that will equal this
in color. I'll be curious just to see what the other series sizes, when they hit 77 inches, they will likely be less than $20,000. So I'd be curious to see how much less.
How much less? You know, will they be able to drop the price of this television next year?
Oh, of course.
The yield's going to go up that much?
I think that it's ramping up constantly. They can't make these fast enough. So, and competition is looming now from many other manufacturers with their own processes and designs. Although LG's got such a nice head start, clearly
on OLED technology.
Yeah, large format displays. I would say Samsung's probably the largest OLED manufacturer in the world just because of their phone production. But that's a tough call, actually. You know, those tiny screens make up the majority of display devices made. Right. So it's just going to be it's going to get better and better for this technology. And the improvements I see year in and year out hold up.
It's amazing when you start looking around. I mean, you know, it's having seen this television, it is gorgeous is an understatement. But it's amazing when you start looking around, and we were talking before we hit the record button, right? The sub $2,500 market for 1080p and 4K projectors is exploding. There's some amazing televisions, but if you want a big, amazing screen, the least expensive way to get it is a projector and a screen, right? Sony's 45ES, amazing 1080p Rec 709 output.
Yep.
That's, I want to say, $1,800 right now.
That's a permanent price reduction they had on that. Yeah. It used to always float in the mid-2000s, and then with the newest 45ES model, they stuck to that $1,999 price point. It's always below that now, and that I have had lots of experience with. The previous model, the 40ES, is just one I've calibrated many times over. When that's set up properly, there is, I can't think of a more impressive Rec 709 1080p display that I've could just, if I was going to pull one out of my hat right now, that's definitely one of them in the top five. It just looks fantastic.
I mean, you know, and for under $1,000, right, you've got BenQ's HT1085ST. That's like selling for $900. Epson's 2040.
As far as 1080p projectors go with regular lamps, we're talking, there are some great options under $600.
Yeah.
To just get your foot in the door.
I'd probably spend the extra $200 and get at least a Epson Home Cinema 2040 or the BenQ BenQ HT1075.
And laser now, laser-based projection, where it uses a laser light source that's long-lived and quick startup and shutdown times, those projector prices are plummeting.
Right.
So it seems, at least in terms of, like, say, LG's laser smart home theater projector, 2,000 lumens, 1080p resolution, good, solid Rec 709 color. Actually, that might even, it's probably a 709. But it also has built-in convenience features like Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and some streaming apps and stuff. And then we were just talking about, when you talk about the bright projectors, too,
right.
That Dell 5,000 lumen short throw laser. Not really for home theater use with just a 709 color, but $6,000 for a laser 4K system that pumps out arguably one of the brightest systems you're going to be able to buy for consumer space if you wanted it. But
the short throw lasers are really big in China. I would not be surprised if they start showing up here in the U.S. too.
I am shocked these aren't promoted more toward like sports bar environments and things like that, where they use typically cheap projectors, DLPs, shining across a room at a screen, whereas it would be...
You need to put the short throw projector on a table or a bench in front of the screen,
it has to be wall-mountable.
You can't put the projector anywhere somebody can set a beer on it.
This is true.
Ceiling mount. Having worked in bars.
Ceiling mount everything.
I mean, I once pulled like 9 beers out of the back of the woofer on one of the stacks at...
People in bars, they'll do anything.
Oh my goodness.
At some point.
Just kept pulling glasses and bottles out.
But anyway, we were talking about this sub $2,500 market now.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, Xiaomi has this new projector. Am I pronouncing that right?
Xiaomi.
Thank you. Jeez. They just introduced another sub $1,500 laser short throw projector. And I love the sweet compact design. They're talking about from a couple inches away from the wall, it'll produce an 80-inch or larger image. Incorporates OK audio, dual tweeters, dual subs, 3 HDMI ports plus a USB 3 port. 5,000 lumens, though, they're claiming out of this design for sub $1,500 pricing. And it's only available in China for now, but that I think you're about to see a flood of similar projectors making their way.
Mm-hmm.
To hopefully North America, where I can check them out in person. Otherwise, I'm going to have to put my Chinese visa to use and go make a quick trip.
Road trip.
Do some shopping.
Oh, my goodness.
But that's yet another great example of here's something that's claiming arguably about twice the light output of your typical projector with laser illumination, with all the benefits that brings in terms of that long lamp life. You likely will never have to change the lamp in it. For the length of your ownership and enjoyment of it. And you compare that to, you know, even Dell's $6,000 4K 5,000 lumen laser, you know, it's 4 times the price. And although Dell's giving you 4 times the resolution, still, though, it's just like, okay, the laser tech has clearly now made that jump, at least into 1080p, sub $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And then just recently, the Home Cinema 4000 from Epson. They announced this projector that incorporates what they call their enhanced 1080p, 4K enhancement, right, effectively, an e-shift design. This is using 1080p three LCD panels that can shift in a way to improve the resolution of the output, approaching 4K detail. And I am really... I can't see really anything wrong with those trade-offs to get to there. They're talking, what, $2,200 price point? DCI color? That to me is the big one.
Yeah.
So for the $2,200 price point, that say $2,000 for maybe street pricing, you're getting a projector that's approaching 4K resolution now with the color system that can really show off the latest formats like Dolby Vision and HDR10. I think that's just fantastic. And they're talking about lamp life's, 5,000 hours in echo mode. So, yeah, you likely will want to keep a lamp around for this. But if you would be willing to trade off the robustness of a laser illumination system, mm-hmm, for going back to lamp, that will get you into the wider color gamut expression in that same price point. So... I am really looking forward to the Home Cinema 4000. I got to say, the motorized lens is probably my favorite part. They're talking 2.1 zoom, presets up to 10 positions. So if you want to create custom setups, maybe you have a 2:35:1 screen, mm-hmm, or a variable masking screen, this might be a great setup for that. Also, it's lens shifting. The motorized lens shifting and projector setup is everything. It just makes it so easy to, especially if you're doing it yourself, to be able to stand close to the screen and make fine adjustments and see it clearly.
Having recently like climbed up a ladder, adjusted things, walked down to see how many kind of pixels I was off from the center of the projector and back up and back down and back up and back down. Focus was the biggest one for me, getting the focus right.
It's critical. And for these three-chip projectors, the number one thing to do after you've let it warmed up and break in a little bit is to check its convergence, where green is usually used as the center target, and then you bring the red and the blue channels to overlay that, and it's getting those red and blue channels to overlay that green information accurately. If they're off a little bit, you get fringing and like white lines and things like that on the screen. It is critical to get that alignment set up right, and they have that function built right in. And the other thing, too, is the horizontal and vertical lens shift. This particular projector is claiming like 97%, I want to say, horizontal. And that is a lot. That exceeds some of the previous designs I've used from them. That gives you some serious placement options if you can't have the projector centered to the screen, if you have to offset it for whatever reason. Like in one case, I had there wasn't a stud nearby that I felt comfortable mounting the projector to. So I had to move it offset a little bit. And being able to use lens shift just to slide that picture back over, fantastic.
Well, I mean, let's you know, kind of dig back for a second. You know, I call this 4K-ish in the opening, right? It's 1920 by 1080, you know, by 3. It's like basically 1080p by 3.
That's the three color channels.
Yeah, that's the 4K enhancement, right? 2,073,600 dots, which is being used to create a 4K or 3840 by 2160. You feel that compared to, say, the Optoma HD60, which is running like, I want to say, 4.15 million mirrors, you know, on its DLP system, where, you know, that seems to be generating a full 4K image.
There's some marketing foo there. And the key thing is, whenever they say that 1920 by 1080 times 3,
right,
that's just literally saying for the red, the blue, and the green channel being all overlaid together. There is no additional information beyond 1080p. Now, their enhancement is a pixel shifting technology,
right,
where they can offset overlaying two separate images, not overlaying, but offset overlaying and interweaving two separate images per se,
right,
to create additional detail. They apparently can't achieve full 4K resolution with this system, unlike something like the Optoma UHD 60 or their 65.
Which is also using pixel shifting technology, except with the micro mirrors on a DLP.
Yes.
And they have a whole bunch more mirrors. They've got like, 4 million mirrors.
Half the mirrors of the 8 million pixels you're going to have on your display on a 4K display.
On a true 4K.
And then each of those mirrors is more than capable of, and it's configured to address two separate pixels or an off state. So there is full 4K resolution addressing with that type of imagery system, and it's a single chip compared to three chip systems. So all those convergence issues I was talking about, where you have to get red and blue just right over green, that goes away with a system like this too. So that makes it, in a sense, a little more efficient or a little bit easier to deal with. You are dealing with color wheels, and in some high contrast content, you may perceive color breakup artifacts, sometimes referred to as rainbowing. I see that less and less as time goes by, so I think they've really done a lot to improve that. But occasionally with a classic black and white movie, I'll pick up a little bit of that artifact if I'm dancing my eyes around the screen too much. But otherwise, I mean, again, that UHD 60 and 65, another $2,000 and $2,500 price point, respectively, for a 4K projector with...
The UHD 60 is essentially, it's $2,000. $3,000 lumens. The UHD 65 is $2,500, and this is the actual street prices.
Yeah,
these 2,200 lumens. They're both using the same TI 4K DLP, but the 2,200 adds Optoma Pure Motion, which is their frame interpolation, and that's what kind of, you know, that's what lowers the brightness, but
it makes movies look right.
Yeah,
if you watch movies on a projector, you probably want the processing in that 65, and I personally would hold out for that. From the reviews we've read from Projector Central and others, they liked it enough where it made enough of a visual difference to where it was worth the vague.
I mean, the crew at Projector Central have gotten hands-on with the UHD 65. They said, we tested the UHD 65's Pure Motion processing with 1080p, 24, 1080p 60, and 2160p 24 inputs. Frankly, this feature is outstanding, perhaps the most impressive frame interpolation processing we've seen yet. Most frame interpolation systems, we see a trade-off between motion smoothing and judder reduction on the one hand and the appearance of the digital video effect on the other.
Usually it's like a teeter-totter. Really, it's not precise independent control for each of those functions. It's like, which way do you want to go with it? And it's always going to be a blend of something. So, yeah.
And you also get a richer color from the color wheel that's used on the UHC65 because, you know, it's RGBCY on the Optoma UHC60 and RGB on the UHC65. So
that's interesting to me. Yeah. I find that RGB windowed pattern on the wheel spinning is what you find in the higher end projectors for that are using single chip DLP. So,
well,
just terrific options. I mean, we're talking about everything we've talked about is under $3,000. Mm-hmm. Some of these are half that. And now we're talking 4K resolution, at least with lamps,
right,
with DCI color.
Right.
What we don't really have are affordable 4K projectors with
DCI we're gonna call
color
the,
lasers. So
I mean, we, you know, last
week's coming.
Last week you seemed pretty comfortable calling the UHC-60 and UHC-65 like 4K projectors, but now are we throttling that back to 4K-ish?
Oh, no.
Okay.
If you put up resolution test patterns on the UHD65 and 60, you feed those 4K test patterns with to see the finest detail, it will show it all. It should do a fantastic job with it. There is no decimation of the detail at all. Now, with Epson's three-chip system and their 4K enhancement technology, I'd say maybe instead of 4K, you're getting 3K.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just throwing that out there. I haven't tested and measured it yet, but you're getting above 1080p detail. So when you do feed it your best sources, you are seeing something better than 1080p, but you aren't quite seeing the full 4K. Regardless, what I really love out of that is the color expression. Being able to do DCI P3, that color format used in Hollywood and used on these UHD Blu-ray discs, and content now available through streaming, you're going to get accurate, more lifelike color from that screen or the produced image from any of these projectors. And that, to me, is more important. I mean, I love solid-state illumination, of course. I think we all are eventually going to end up there. But until then, at least, we can get some better color out of these systems affordably. The lamp systems are the quickest way you're going to get to 4K or 4K-ish with that sweet color palette now available with the HDR formats.
Right.
And it's the prices are just outrageous. I really now want to experiment with one of these 5,000 lumen laser projectors and a light rejecting screen in some challenging environments, like my favorite sports bar.
So much goodness. It is a good time to be buying. And, you know, like we've talked about in the last couple episodes, there are some fantastic values on the TV side, everywhere from like $600 4K televisions that are actually worth buying all the way up through you know, the $20,000 W7 we're talking about.
TCL
P
series keeps racking up great reviews. Mm-hmm. And if I implied that set didn't have DCI color capabilities, it apparently does. It has wide gamut support. If it, what the percentage of coverage is of DCI, I don't know. I'm guessing it's probably not approaching 100. It's probably in the mid to low 90s, but that's still pretty damn good. It's better than the plain flavored Rec 709 HD 4K TVs we've seen too many of up to this point. So for that, I appreciate it.
Dolby Atmos coming to Netflix. Okja, June 28th. Blame, July 28th. Death Note, August 25th. Bright in December. And Wheelman just says 2017.
Okja's the odd one. That's Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos in a presentation available through streaming. So if you have the LG OLED with the updates ready to roll.
Or a Xbox One or Xbox One S.
Yes, that'd be another way to get it. With that, you could at least send the audio back to a receiver if you wanted. However, if you were looking to do this display-wise, you would still need something that supported Dolby Vision. Maybe the Vizio P owners are suddenly smiling a little bit more.
Well basically, see. Netflix says Dolby Atmos streaming is supported on a Microsoft's Xbox One, One S, and 2017 LG OLED TVs. On the Xbox, you can get this experience when your console is connected to a Dolby Atmos-enabled home theater system, TV or soundbar, or via headphones. The LG OLED TVs have built-in Dolby Atmos capabilities that create a 360-degree sound field around you without the need to connect to an external sound system. If I have a superior external sound system, can I use that instead of the speakers in the LG TV?
Of course.
Okay.
However, on the LG setup, I haven't heard any word if the 2016 TVs will receive this update. This is all, we're talking the 2017 TV models. All have Dolby Atmos, all have Dolby Vision support built in. So they're good to go. I mean, I was like, of course that should be available first on those.
Yeah, but. I mean, Nile Patel on The Verge, just wrote a huge article. Hundreds of LG OLED TV owners are petitioning for Dolby Atmos support. Why put a smartphone OS on your TV if you're not going to update it?
They would like that built in. And
yeah.
You and I, you've taught me the ways. External boxes are the way to go, people. Or I succumb, or whatever. I realize I'm done with pain.
Well, it's
TV apps just get stale.
The thing that Nile says in the article, right? So these 2016 LG OLED TVs, they support Dolby Vision HDR.
Yes.
But you have to use the built-in WebOS app to get it. But the TV doesn't support sending Dolby Atmos out through HDMI to your speakers.
That could be fixed. I'm almost certain.
I would hope.
See, the thing is with the 2016 TVs, there were chipset differences in a couple of the models at the ends, at the bottom end and the high end. And I wonder if that's part of the problem of trying to deploy that. That's another nice thing about the 2017 models. Not only do you have this support built in, but the updates generally are going to roll to all those models a lot faster, I think. What am I saying? I just told you it's never going to happen.
Well, it would be nice if
you'll get this update. If you're a 2017 TV owner, I think you're okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Still, though, to see object-based audio.
Right.
I'm assuming this might even be lossless or lossless-like quality.
We had a, it's funny. I'm trying to find the.
I'm all for that. That's such a nice thing to add to streaming services, considering at least make it an option, because the bit rates for good audio are so low compared to video. It's like, why not just have that there? Be done with it.
Oh, my goodness.
It is a no-brainer.
I love those moments when you can't find the tweet you're looking for. But we had someone asked us if that meant... here it is. At DanStanley01, does this mean lossless audio is coming to Netflix? Where it's basically talking about... Dan Stanley is asking...
I would say, yeah. It's not hard to do. I mean, LPCM audio is lossless. So yeah, that's what Sony used to transmit with their 4K streaming services. And I was like, this sounds significantly better than, you know, old school Dolby Digital or something like that. I would hope all lossless formats are supported, especially just to make it easier for the people producing the content, not to have to guess which audio format to use or something, or just redo something they've already done when it can just be delivered. It kind of as is. I would appreciate it. I would.
Yeah. I mean, I just wish there were more titles.
It's, what are we on, week two, week three?
No, but you're thinking streaming, and I'm thinking of UHD Blu-rays.
Oh, I'm also thinking of like Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos. And
right.
Yeah, that's a rare breed.
Well, if you go up to Dolby's website, we'll have a link in the show notes.
The Atmos-enabled titles. There aren't as many as I would like.
Well, they have a PDF they update every month with all of the available titles that support Dolby Atmos. And it's a curious mix. I mean, you've got everything from, like, you know... The Age of Adeline, Allegiant Part 1, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, American Sniper, Angels and Demons, Angry Birds, Batman versus Superman, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which I bet is fascinating.
I would like to listen to that.
Deadpool, which is
I
really...
I would like to listen to that.
Yeah. The Expendables 2, The Expendables 3, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which probably sounds great in Atmos. The Fifth Element at Atmos.
I'll listen to that, too.
All the first six seasons of Game of Thrones, Ghost in the Shell, Ghostbusters 1984, Ghostbusters 2, Ghostbusters 2016, Gravity, which I think is the single best demonstration of Dolby Atmos.
Okay. I'll add that to the...
object-oriented sound technology. It is
test suite.
Oh, my goodness. It'll put the fear into you. The Great Wall, which I'm not sure I want to see. Hacksaw Ridge, the Hunger Games films. It's a curious mix. John Wick, John Wick Chapter 2. Finally got to see John Wick Chapter 2 last night.
Don't tell me. I still haven't watched either one.
Okay.
I am so...
You haven't seen John Wick?
No.
You know what? You say that, and then
I wait
say
for things to build up
thing.
Until it's inevitable, and then it just hits me like a ton of bricks.
Mad Max Fury Road, The New Magnificent Seven. Is this a curious... There's a curious collection of films. It's gotten a lot bigger, and it looks like it's going to be, you know, it's going to keep growing over time. If you're contemplating taking the Atmos plunge, which of course requires at least two and possibly four speaker top or ceiling mounted speakers, plus a Dolby Atmos compatible receiver.
3D audio. And as cool as that is, the Dolby Vision side of things, and when it comes to comparing that with HDR10, yeah. John Archer over at Forbes put up a pretty cool article just to give you a preview of what to expect with these new Dolby Vision titles on UHD Blu-ray. And the short story is that dynamic metadata makes the content look better. Mm-hmm. Being able to do that per frame, per scene optimization for the overall luminance level improves the overall contrast of the picture, which, in his words, the color saturation and detail highlights were significantly improved. And this really, of all the TVs tested that you would test this on, it will make OLEDs look the best. Or it would look, you would notice it more on those type of displays that are more optimized for doing the darkest detail or for preserving just epic contrast in the picture. I would say that when he looked at them on some LCDs, he was actually, in this case, able to compare doing Dolby Vision output on UHD Blu-ray using one player and then having a... I think he was using the 203 from Oppo. And then on the other TV, he had a similar Panasonic player that was just doing HDR10 playback. But he's had enough time with it to compare, and he felt that the output on both was... He felt like the HDR10 output on the Panasonic was great, and the UHD 203... UDP? UDP 203? Anyway, the 203 from Oppo. That set up for the Dolby Vision support. Basically gave him a good A-B to go back and forth and look at some of the initial titles at least and see what can be seen. And overall, it just seems like it's a perfect match in terms of that's something that should have been there probably from the beginning. And I'm now glad to see some examples you can hold in your hand in terms of how a dynamic metadata system is going to surpass. And it should have been the way it compared to something static, so to speak. And I'm loving it. And the fact that it'll just make all those LG TVs look a little bit better is just kind of funny, but in a good way.
Yeah.
I'm digging it. Oh, one quick update. I noticed last weekend, the good folks at Nanosys, who are a quantum dot manufacturer, tweeted out a photo from a Samsung event showing off what's coming up in terms of LCD technology and how it's being improved and enhanced. And they were showing off a replacement system for the color filter on an LCD, and they're talking about 2018 before this comes up, but it's still going to retain a blue backlight system, and instead of having a separate sheet for the quantum dot material to be impregnated with the red and blue or red and green sections, in this case they're actually embedding this material within the color filter itself. So in the case for blue, the blue light will likely go through a transparent window through that subpixel. But for red and green, that blue light's going to strike embedded quantum dot materials to be emissive right from the surface. And that should generally improve off-axis viewing, approaching hopefully what OLED folks are doing. We'll see. This is going to be neat. This is just the next step. I believe this will be called photoemissive. This is essentially, instead of using that separate sheet, just embedding the quantum dot technology right into the color filter. Mm-hmm. And doing this either through inkjet style technology or the current patterning process that's already in place. It seems ready to go. I can't wait to actually see this in action. I'm hoping we'll see an actual live demo on the show floor at CES next year in January, if not a little sooner. But this literally then, except for the blue light, but you could think of the red and the green channel on the surface of an LCD becoming emissive rather than transmissive. LCDs generally, in order to produce the color you see, are literally shining a flashlight through the screen. So each light source behind that screen is lighting up many pixels, whereas on an OLED, you can have per pixel illumination. And while this update for the LCD color filter using quantum dot tech isn't yet truly per pixel emissive, it is moving that light generation closer to the surface of the screen, improving your wide axis viewing. And that is important. Mm-hmm. And they're also claiming 2 to 2.5 times luminance improvements. Or you could translate that into half the power consumption for the same amount of brightness coming off the screen. But sounds like another way, too, to push these displays to ever higher levels of light output. So I'm looking forward to it.
I don't want to drag us back.
What? Go for it.
No, I went down the rabbit hole. I feel like I'm going to need to make some phone calls because I'm thinking about the whole idea of is there, it's Atmos in its native environment or in its original environment, like on a Blu-ray disc or in a theater, is lossless, right? They basically created additional channels.
Like Dolby True HD.
Yeah, it's essentially...
I consider it like an extension of that, except with the
Well,
object.
For Blu-ray and Ultra HD Blu-ray, there's going to be lossless Dolby True HD, right? And they've essentially added the Atmos information to a sub-channel on that, right?
I would assume that you're not leaving the lossless world with Atmos. I don't think it is a compressed form. Everything's compressed, but...
I guess what I'm trying to say is if Dan Stanley 01's thinking like, oh, is now that they're embracing Atmos for these premier titles on Netflix, does that mean Netflix is going to go and implement streaming True HD? I don't think so for the majority of its content.
That would be nice.
It would be nice. And I would like everyone to hand...
You're pleasing.
Everyone I see... on the street, it would be nice if they all handed me $100, but I'm not sure, if Netflix has 50 million consumers worldwide and they are consuming a staggering amount of bandwidth on the internet, I'm not entirely sure Netflix is going to go out of their way to create lossless audio tracks for the minority, much less the majority of the titles they have available.
I would hope they just offer it as an option under all the other optional features of anything you're streaming from them, like closed captioning, foreign language support. There should be a lossless option, considering the content already exists. There's nothing you have to do other than push it and ensure there's app support. If they want to charge a little extra for that, if you're already in their 4K packages, you should automatically receive it.
You need to get Dolby Atmos titles on Netflix, you need to be in the 4 screens plus Ultra HD Netflix streaming plan. And then you'll see titles with Dolby Atmos, have a little, Atmos logo next to them. And you need an internet connection speed of at least 3 megabits per second to stream titles with Dolby Atmos audio.
Good.
So
that implies lossless then. They're pushing more data. And my ears are happy. they are.
Yeah, but you also have to remember, like, for Ultra HD quality, Netflix recommends that you can stream 25 megabits per second and 5 megabits per second for HD quality. So apparently...
No problem there.
Streaming SD quality video, because, like...
SD quality
video is 3 megabits per second, so apparently you can get SD streaming with Dolby Atmos.
Can I adjust how my bandwidth is allocated?
Man, that's just gonna make my skull hurt. But we'll also ask, see if Dolby will talk to us about how they're implementing that, because now I'm deeply curious about that, even more than usual. Prime Day's coming. If you're an Amazon Prime member, or if you're considering a trial membership, Prime Day 2017 is July 11th.
Holy
I'm going
to
say don't get too excited, because people get crazy about this, because Amazon's going to give me all the stuff I want for nothing. I will say, if you find a deal, it's fantastic. But in 2016, the Wirecutter looked at 7,950 deals and found what they considered 64
good deals.
Legit.
Like,
okay.
Actual.
Worth it.
Worth it deals. If you've never been there, camelcamelcamel.com is your friend. Because it gives you the pricing history of something.
The browser plugin's super handy.
Yeah. And
highly recommend that.
You know, if you've never been to camelcamelcamel.com, or if you've never searched for the browser extension, go take a look at that, because you'll actually see how pricing drops over time, or has going up over time, or is being manipulated around.
You can set alarms and triggers too. Like, there was a pair of shoes I wanted, and I wasn't paying full price. That's like, you know what? Anyway, you can use it for anything.
Yeah,
not just electronics.
Oh my goodness. There's a good article though up on the Wirecutter. Amazon Prime Day 2017: What to Expect and How to Find the Best Deals. If you find a good deal,
jump on it.
But don't assume just because it's a Prime deal, it's actually particularly awesome. You know, and remember, there's like traditional deals that last all day, and then there's timers, stuff that's on timers, which are the lightning deals. Yeah, and then there can also be a wait list if some of the deals run out. You should put yourself on the wait list if it's available.
In case people bail.
Yeah, just in case, JIC. But, you know, a lot of the deals aren't so awesome. So Camel is your friend. That'll tell you what the price was on the day before.
I might have to see if that Pioneer UHD Blu-ray drive for my PC is on sale. That could be something. Or maybe an Intel CPU.
Oh, that would be nice.
Or some Corsair RAM. Or a nice Asus motherboard.
Or a new monitor.
Aww. You know?
Or a Pony. Or you could finally upgrade that processor.
Things I really don't need, but it'd be nice.
Crew over at JDS Labs sent me one of their EL DACs to check out. And so their EL series, right? They started with, and they still sell a fantastic Chumoy headphone amp. It's the Altoid headphone amp, which is a kit, which is pretty awesome. But if you go to their website, which is jdslabs.com, I'm a huge fan of their headphone amp, the Element, which is a headphone amp and a DAC. And I want to say at the end of 2016, they created the EL amp and the EL DAC, which are essentially separates, right? So you get all of the spectacular performance of the Element in a standalone headphone amplifier for like $280. And,
nice.
You know, they also have the Northwest Audio guy design, the sort of group designed Objective 2 and OL DAC, which, you know, is a unbelievable piece of hardware for the money. It's like $130 for the Objective 2, $140 for the OL DAC. And, you know, I like the guys at JDS Labs, the crew there, they're trying to, they call it true performance design. That's kind of their marketing term for it. And, you know, what they're trying to deliver is performance, you know, that is beyond what anybody's ears can detect, right? So like,
is this something you connect to a computer or?
Yes. In these cases, well, you could run the EL DAC's interesting because I was the EL DAC will function, but it has a whole bunch of inputs on it, right? So
okay.
You can either use the USB input from your computer. It also has, if my brain was functioning at the moment, it's got a USB input,
digital,
a coax input, and an optical input. So if you wanted to use this, if you wanted to use this to take sort of the transport from your CD player, or, you know, basically it's designed to take, you know, an optical, a coax, or a USB signal, and then turn it into analog audio. That's what this does.
This would be nice to have just as a headphone amp on the workstation.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because it's
the audio processor for it too.
You know, the kind of two differences between the Element and the EL DAC and the EL amp is one that they've separated the EL amp and the EL DAC into separate devices, right?
Oh.
And they're not used, and that means basically each has its own distinct power supply, which is one of the things that the people who design circuits tell me can make a big difference between a super, super inexpensive implementation of a DAC and a more expensive. And, you know, I can certainly, you know, hear people like, $250 for a DAC, you're insane. And on one hand, I get that. But you can also spend, you know, thousands of dollars on DACs. People do it all the time, which I think is kind of insane. I think there's a law of diminishing returns there. But this uses a very, very different digital analog converter, different, very, very different chip, the AK4490 EQ. And, you know, I'm curious. I'm going to do some A-B testing because in theory, right, you know, you if you have bits, all the analog output should sound the same, right?
Yeah. No, that to me seems difficult. I could understand getting ones and zeros through a pipe and right. coming out identical.
You know, let's
those DA conversions, on the other hand.
Well, decisions are made, right?
Yes.
I will be experimenting and learning, and I'm also going to be talking to some people that can do math a lot better than I am and have things like engineering degrees. And, you know, I don't think I'm going to hear an $8,000 DAC and be like, this is what I need to actually enjoy music. Because quite frankly, you know, if you want to hear some phenomenal,
I mean, you look at the specs on this thing they seem very confident and they're claiming, and they offer what they would consider, I guess, pristine output, even though they don't believe anybody can actually hear the difference. It seems overbuilt for even whatever setup you're trying to connect to it, regardless of the type of headphone or, you know, and the flexibility of different PC scenarios, if you want to connect it that way, standalone.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's one of those things. If you've got a set of headphones you like, and you're thinking like, gosh, do I need a headphone amp? Do I need a DAC? In a lot of cases, you probably don't. It really depends on what's inside of your computer, for example, if that's what you're plugging it into. You know, traditionally, the DACs inside of most iPhones and iPods are actually pretty good. Now, I know there's going to be people who are super audio nerds who are going, no, they were terrible. But the reality is, in some cases, you had some pretty fantastic Burr Brown DACs and some other really excellent choices being made.
Something I've noticed myself paying more attention to with mobile devices is, do they claim putting a decent DAC in that thing?
Right. And some do, like LG's VG20 or V20.
So curious.
You know, if you want to make a step up, there are two fantastic options. If your computer can't drive your headphones, if there are noise issues, if you can hear the hard drive spinning up through your headphone connection, if you pause the music, can you hear a bunch of noise or hiss or slop? You know, are there audible issues? Is there stuff making the song sound crappy you don't hear when you listen to the same track, you know, in your car, on your, you know, your home stereo system? Two of the best options out there are AudioQuest Dragonfly, which the Dragonfly Black starts at $100. And then the Shit Fula 2. As a matter of fact, if you dig around on the Shit website, you can find the original Fula for $59, which is a fantastic entry-level DAC and headphone amplifier. The Shit Fula 2 is using the same AK4490 DAC that the... Or a similar AKM, AK4490 digital analog converter that's in that EL DAC from JDS Labs. The Fula 2 doesn't have nearly the amplification performance of JDS Labs, the Element, or JDS Labs EL amp. But it's a, you know, if you're kind of dipping your toe for $100 for the Shit Fula 2 or the Dragonfly, AudioQuest Dragonfly Black are fantastic. And they can really open up a set of headphones, and you know the sound quality in either one of those is going to be really, really good. I paid out of pocket for, I'm on my second Dragonfly.
Worthy upgrades.
Yeah.
If that's your thing, man.
I'm going to pick up probably a Shit Fula 2 just because I want to compare it to some of the other implementations. If you want to get the blog over at JDS Labs is really, really interesting because they talk a lot about, you know, how they're designing, what they're designing for. You know, like, they've got a great article, what makes the Element different from the Objective 2 plus ODAC.
Nice.
And you start looking at the performance numbers. Yeah, I mean, they're pretty, you know, they're pretty ridiculous, right? You're looking at, like, the frequency response is 0.1 dB from 20 to 20,000 hertz. THD plus N is 0.0009% at 2 volts RMS input.
That sounds clean.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the crosstalk is like negative 86 dB. The output impedance is like 0.1 ohms, so it'll drive anything. You know, at 32 ohms, the maximum power is 1.5 watts.
Excellent.
So, you know, there's enough power in the Element to basically make your ears meet in the center of your head. And it's clean. there is no noise on this thing. You know, the other thing I was, you know, this got me thinking about looking at the kind of the blog entries on JDS Labs and thinking about testing is a great, Sean Olive is one of the primary researchers in audio, period. You know, I don't know how else to say it. He works for Harman Kardon. He's done a lot of the baseline testing. And one of the fun ones to look at, you know, when you're talking to somebody or you're on the forums and somebody's telling you how their $2,000 speaker cables are the thing that really brought the whole system together. He's got a beautiful article on his blog, seanolive.blogspot.com. This goes way, way back in 2009, where he did blind versus sighted listening tests. And the results for the expensive speakers versus the inexpensive speakers changed radically. You know, the people liked the cheap speaker a lot more when they couldn't see it. They basically like put an opaque sound, you know, permeable covering between the listening audience and the speakers.
We are biased creatures.
We are terribly biased creatures.
We like the things that are attractive.
Yeah, and one of the things that
spew more affection on those things.
Yeah, and you know, in some cases
compared to things that aren't attractive.
Yeah, well, they also did an interesting article. He just one of his I think his most recent blog post, which is back in February. Predicting headphone sound quality, where they looked at the correlation between price and sound quality in earbuds. You know, and the answer, as they say, might surprise you.
The high performance red paint job.
Well, let's just say I was a lot less impressed with a lot of incredibly expensive in-ear monitors after I heard them at CanJam.
There you go.
But the other thing that Harman's working on is like what they call their virtual headphone listening test, where they're trying to figure out ways to synthesize the sound of headphones, because it's really hard to blind test headphones. It's really easy to drop a sheet basically in front of a bunch of speakers, and they have this like system that automatically moves the speakers, shuffles the speakers in and out. But you know, if you have four or five different headphones, it's pretty obvious that one of them is the big expensive planar magnetic one, and another one is an expensive lighter headphone. You know, so he's going really hard on pure science and objective measurements. It's an interesting blog to read, especially because they've also been working really, really hard at Harman over the last few years on figuring out like what's kind of the optimal sound for a headphone.
Right.
And, there's some really great writing on that on Inner Fidelity.
I mean, the challenges of audio products you wear, that just introduces
Well, the challenges of all audio products.
True.
Right?
But in particular for the testing.
Yeah,
like repeatability and things like that. There's the variability of a skull or that listening tool.
Well, everybody's
one thing.
Difference.
I can put a calibrated mic in front of a speaker, mm-hmm. and I can repeat things over and over and get nuanced about it. But man, there's a whole side of challenges.
Get the
let
premium
alone personal bias.
Yeah, and look, do yourself a favor if you're starting to get serious about listening, buy CDs and rip them to FLAC, or at the very least. You know, a 256 or 300K MP3, but please, storage is cheap.
Or buy a pair of blinders and have your friends put the headphones on you and not tell you what they are.
That is part of the process that the crew at Harman
surprised.
Has gone through. or maybe not. There's
money was spent.
Yeah. Well, once you get to a certain level, there's not as much garbage, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because things get expensive and expensive headphones that sound like crap get, you know, beaten to death. But, you know, when you're looking at that $300 range, boy, you want to listen to it, and audition it if you can, because there's a lot of crappy headphones between $100 and $300. There's a lot of crappy headphones between $50 and $100. You know, Sony MDR-7506 is a great place to start.
Find those gems.
You know.
Clutch them preciously.
One more triple.
Oh, they're triple driver.
Triple driver in-ear. Fantastic. Beautiful. We just got the lightning version of those. We're going to be testing those.
Excellent.
This week. But anyhow, I will keep y'all posted on my DAC adventure, because I'm trying to figure out, you know, I really believe the transducer, the thing that turns the electrical impulses into the sound waves you hear, the speaker or the earbud or the headphone.
Converter.
I think that's the most important thing.
The energy converter.
I think the source is the second most important thing. I think a clean amp is the third most important thing. I'm really curious to see. I've heard some cheap
like implementations of ESS Sabre DAX did not sound as good as quality implementations of. Like I've heard like the same ESS Sabre DAC from a AudioQuest Dragonfly implemented in like a $25 DAC that came straight to me from China, and the $25 DAC had some audible issues to it. Now maybe I had a bad unit, which is entirely
parts integration.
Possible. Yeah, or maybe they just did a crappy job with the power supply.
You come up with a beautiful design, but and all the right parts, but if it isn't assembled right, to a good enough degree.
You know, I think the projector. You know, the projector or the television and having it calibrated properly is really, really important. Having, you know, the best speakers or headphones that you can afford is a big deal. And, you know, there's amazing speakers for not that much money these days.
Just keep it balanced, folks.
Yeah.
Don't buy the $20,000 TV if you're still rolling TV speakers. Well, own a house, I think, first. That might be it. Nah, I don't know. Do what you like.
It's your money.
I understand.
Spend it where you want.
That's a drool-worthy OLED.
And if you've got a $12,000 DAC and you want to tell me how I have it all wrong, and you can't be serious about music until you have $3,000 or $4,000 invested in your DAC, tell me all about it. Send me out one to test. I'll give it a listen.
Ah.
Robert and I, we'll put it behind, you know, we'll hide it. Robert can switch my headphone cables.
There we go.
Or he can switch the inputs to the headphone amp. But... oh, my goodness. ask@avxl.com is the email address.
Do it, people.
Please. We love your questions, and we would like to hear you fire them on out. And, man, at Robert Herron, at Patrick Norton, at AVXL on the Twitters is a great place to track us down. If you enjoy the podcast, you want to help keep it coming, do us a favor and join us on Patreon.com/AVXL. We are holding another because of a botch this week. We're holding another family emergency. Things went sideways. In any case, we're going to do a hangout next week. You've gotten an email about it if you're the appropriate level Patreon supporter, and we'll be doing one in another 2 weeks into July. We're going to catch up some on those, and we want to thank each and every one of you for listening. And hey, in case we didn't make it clear, avxl.com is the website, and that's where you can get all the information on subscribing and all the links in the show notes. So thank you.
Heck yeah.
Thank you all for listening
very much.
I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Robert Herron.
Oh, and I saw Cars 3 in a theater.
Oh, I had an invite to go see that in Dolby Cinema, but
I got the children into a theater to see it.
Oh, that's challenging.
It was fun.
Oh, good, man.
You know.
Was the movie any good?
Movie was great.
Okay.
It wasn't as good as the first Cars. Way better than the second Cars, which isn't saying much. Way, way better than the second Cars. I will say, you know, it's been a while since I've walked away with, you know, $35 of food and realized I just spent more on, you know, three drinks and some... Yeah,
I don't know. Something about the cherry Coke in a movie theater that just tastes way good to me.
Yeah,
I don't know
the popcorn sucks compared to the popcorn I make at home.
All I know is that they give you these troughs now where you can literally spray as much butter crap on it as you want. Butter flavoring. I am shocked they allow
non-butter containing butterish
whatever
stuff.
That material is. I'm shocked they just allow people to go at it with it. Like if you want to soak that bowl.
Let me give you a big hint. If they allow you to turn your bowl of popcorn into a bowl of popcorn suspended in non-butter grease, that means that stuff's really cheap, man.
Yeah, the secret is coconut oil.
The secret is like having absolutely nothing that ever spoke to or lived near butter. Yes, better popcorn, a fine reason to have a better home theater, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Plus no $9 Cokes.
Only if you want one.
I think I paid $7 for a Coke, a Diet Coke.
I don't know.
It would have been an affordable family night out if I hadn't like gotten to get popcorn.
That's an expensive soda, man.
That was a really expensive
serious
soda.
Serious profit markup there.
You know, it's a beautiful theater, though.
10-cent product? $9.
Yeah. Cha-ching. Well, charge what the sucker will pay you.
Hey.
Charge what the market will
bear.
You're
a captive audience.
I'm pretty sure I could manage to sneak in a couple of Diet Cokes, and that would be that dad.
Just drop the bottle, drop the bottle on the ground right in the quietest part of the movie and just have it roll for like 5 minutes, bouncing through the seats. I don't even know if that's possible in modern theater design.
Somebody right now is laughing hysterically because they're remembering being a teenager and bringing beers into a movie theater.
Clang, clang, clang.
Yeah. You know what? Release your garbage. Don't be the guy that leaves the giant mess under your seat. Yes. Or gal, for that matter.
I probably did that as a kid.
AVXL.com.
Whatever pain I
Patreon.com/AVXL.
Do it now.
Ask at AVXL.com.
Do that too.
At Robert Heron.
Yep.
At Patrick Norton.
Uh-huh.
At AVXL.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you all so much.
Bye-bye.